Welcome to World Anti-Extremism Network's scholarly podcast on ideas for countering extremism and authoritarianism. In this conversation, we explore totalitarian and authoritarian regime, ideological polarization, and the spread of extremist narratives, both secular and religious, that pose serious challenges to freedom, human dignity, and democratic values. We'll also look at how these systems use tools like digital propaganda, state surveillance, arbitrary arrest, torture, disappearances, and other form of suppression. I am Ahrar Ramispour, and joining me is Mr. Simon Lee, an American Hong Konger with a diverse career as an editorial columnist on business, economics, and politics. He's also an entrepreneur leading a startup that blends media and education, and a well-known advocate for the Hong Konger diaspora. Welcome, Mr. Simon, to the World Anti-Extremism Podcast. Without further delay, I'm going to start with my first question. What are the differences between the terms totalitarianism and authoritarianism, and how would you define extremism?
Okay, let's start with extremism. Extremism, I think, if we think about a world where we cannot tolerate differences, and we can only allow one voice to be spoken by the people, I think that is extremism. That is what the world would be like with one voice, just one idea. And if you look at most of the people who are passionate about what they believe in, they have the tendency in believing that there's only one voice should be allowed. I think that is the most dangerous way of thinking about what is truth. I'm not saying truth does not exist. Truth exists, but truth does not exist in the domain of us, like the secular human beings. If we have a philosophical exploration into the nature of epistemology on what is truth, probably a lot of people will tell you different ways of identifying what is truth. But personally, I am a skeptic, meaning that I don't even think that what I believe in might be true all the time. So I think that is very important. Then go to the other two terms that you just raised, totalitarianism and authoritarianism. Totalitarianism is a system of government that wants to control every single aspect of people's life, including what they wear, what they do, what they see, what they listen to, etc., etc. It is total control. And authoritarianism, I think, goes into the domain of what is right versus wrong, and it is decided not by the people on their own as an individual, but as a collective by people in a higher position, people with the power to call what is right versus wrong. And here, I think we have to differentiate what is true versus false and what is right versus wrong. Because think about that. You might like certain kind of food. Some other people might like other kinds of food. There is no right or wrong. It is just a matter of choice. However, under authoritarian regimes, a matter of preference could become a matter of right or wrong. And I think that becomes very dangerous as well. And also, if we go one step further, if the right versus wrong becomes a matter of whether something is true or not, then people create a disillusion, like they will see people holding other beliefs or people practicing a different ways of life being untrue and not human. And you can see the slippery slope there. When things are becoming from just a matter of personal choice to a matter of right versus wrong, to a matter of whether it is true or not, has profound implications on how we see other people. And so if you ask me, I think extremism is the ultimate, the most dangerous form of collectivism, because it cannot even tolerate tiny bit of differences. They can only either coerce other people to change or completely annihilate them from their side.
Yeah, great. Thanks. Thanks for a very nice description about these concepts of totalitarianism and authoritarianism and extremism. Indeed, we unfortunately have examples of these kind of regimes in our contemporary world. We have regimes in different parts of the world. They are restricting human dignity, human rights, freedom of choice, freedom of movement, freedom of expression, and all freedom of human communities, unfortunately. How do you see the role of ideology in today's totalitarian regimes? Because in the past, we had this Marxism or Leninism or communism ideologies or Maoism ideology. How do you see now? Because we still have these kind of regimes. Do they follow some sort of ideologies, or they just want to keep power on their hands and their circle and suppress their people?
The rules of politics actually is pretty simple. That is how small group of people can manipulate a large group of people and make them compliant or even work for the very small group of people. You don't always use force to achieve your ends. Most of the time, people who see themselves as weak will tend to rely on strong men, a strong government, strong state for protection. But what actually is happening is the weak, the mass, the collective of people are protecting the so-called strong men. And if you mention about ideology, at the end of the day, ideology and identity are closely related to each other. And think about that. If I ask someone what they believe in, probably the belief itself can be identified as a certain identity. It is the person's who they are, therefore what they believe in. So if we look at contemporary politics, we have so-called identity politics. Or if we go back to 19th century, we have class struggle. You try to put a whole group of people with the same economic situation, and we call them, you are the workers class, you are the proletariat, you work for the landowners, you form groups, and then you antagonize people against each other. But if we look at people as individuals, then the situation would be very different, because every one of us, both at the same time, the member of some other groups, but also we are a complete independent individual. So I think one of the most important issues here is where we draw the boundary between our individuality versus the rest of the world. It is not we versus them. It is I and the rest of the world. It's not a relationship of antagonism. It is not I am the only one and the rest of the world is my enemy. No, I exist as an individual, complete. But I also exist as members of different groups, family, my company, my hobby group, people who share the same beliefs, who just happen to be born in the same place with speaking the same language, we belong to different groups. And these groups, sometimes they can work together, sometimes they cannot. But that is the reality of groups. Each group has its own objectives, and these objectives sometimes have conflict with even the individual or groups against the groups. And that is a very interesting dynamics. But if we look at the world just as two group of people, then it is a problem, because we don't allow like multiple identity, multiple memberships in different groups. But just to think about that, all totalitarian regimes, authoritarian regimes, extremist organizations, what they do is to forbid their members to have multiple membership, to have identity that mix with other identities and to become a more complex but more complete person. They try to flatten everything into a very simple antagonist relationship, we versus them. Whenever you see something like that, that is when some ideology becoming firstly belligerent and secondly becoming more isolationist and trying to create a fanatical movement within the small group.
I think there are some regimes, for instance, reaching to power through democratic system or democratic mechanisms, for instance, by election. And then that political party or group, whenever they reach to power, they're trying to monopolize the power to establish a kind of powerful circle around the leader or the leadership of the party or around the party, and to keep the power for forever. We have examples of these kind of regimes. You reached to power by these democratic mechanisms, but they are insisting right now, for instance, to keep the power and to continue their dictatorship against their societies and misusing the democratic tools for their societies. If we could elaborate a little bit about that, some early warning signs that a government is becoming authoritarian or extremist.
Electoral politics and democracy are two different things. Democracy means no one stays in power forever. And that is only one aspect of democracy, right? Democracy means rule by the people, but who are the people? And what does it mean by ruling? And I think there are different dimensions of democracy. One is no one stays in power forever. And secondly, there is a logic of where and how power is being exercised. We talked about the divisions of powers, separations of powers into legislative, executive, and judiciary. That is the textbook explanation. What textbook missed is the idea of subsidiarity. That means power should be exercised at the level closest to the individual whenever possible, whenever necessary. So if there is a decision that could be made between two persons in a mutually beneficial manner, that two persons should be able to come to a agreement on a certain decision to be made. You don't need other people to be involved in that decision, especially when those other people do not have a stake in the decision itself. Let's say we agree on a certain date and time to record this podcast. We don't have to hold a referendum with other 8 billion people on the earth to decide when and where we should record this podcast. It could be decided just between two of us. Or maybe just now the example is too extreme. You don't have to involve other people who are not being even involved in this podcast to make that decision. It is just simple common sense, right? But if we look at the world now, the decision-making is becoming more complicated. Whenever two people need to decide on something, probably that involves some other third party who are not even being involved in the matter of transactions. So I think that is the issue of subsidiarity, which should be emphasized, and it is not emphasized enough by people. Okay, other than subsidiarity, I think another important element of democracy is the respect of differences. And I think that is related in a sense that you have to understand that in a free, open, and democratic society, you will inevitably come across people who do not agree with you. But the problem is where you draw the boundary. Of course, we are all humans. When we come across people who do not agree with us, we will try to convince them. We will have some emotion. Inevitably, we have emotion. I can understand that. But the issue is where we draw the boundary. Then we go back to subsidiarity, right? So if something does not involve the other person, whoever agree or disagree with us, that is none of his business. And vice versa, right? If there are people who are conducting their own business, but it has nothing to do with us, whether you agree or not, that is none of your business. And I think that is very important. That is very important in the democracy. But just now we talk about electoral politics. I think electoral politics ties in with the first elements of democracy. That is, no one stays in power forever. So when we run elections, the whole purpose, the only purpose, is not to appoint someone to exercise power on our behalf. Election means everyone has a chance of losing the election. And if he or she loses the election, that's it. He loses the election. She loses the election. That is the end of it. Of course, you can complain about electoral irregularity and all sorts of things. Do it through a civilized manner. Otherwise, no one will respect the election. And of course, election manipulation is a wrong thing, because that means someone wants to stay in power forever. That is not acceptable. But as long as no one can stay in power forever, I think that is, the election has served its purpose, and that's it. Personally, I am not very obsessed about electoral politics. I think electoral politics is just show business. But some people are very passionate about it. I understand that. Just not me.
Yeah, beside of the electoral topic or election in democratic system, as you explained, I think there is also some authoritarian or totalitarian regimes or leaders. They are misusing the power through changing or amending the law, for instance, the constitution, and they are somehow ignoring the electoral system and trying to stay in power forever. And we have examples of these kind of countries or states in our time. The leaders misusing the power through the changing of constitution, they want to stay in power. This is other aspect of the democratic system, unfortunately. And we have examples. You want to say something on this?
So the safeguard for a democratic society is not just elections. You also need a free and open society that people understand there are different opinions in other people's mind, number one. And then secondly, you have to tolerate the fact that other people are saying things that you don't agree with. So I am a free speech absolutist. That means I think there are hate speech, there are stupid speech. You have to allow them. Once you open up the Pandora box that some speech is forbidden, then you go into this slippery slope that, oh, maybe some other speeches, some other ideas should be forbidden. And then on and on, more and more things cannot be said and cannot be thought about. I think that is dangerous. So I think you have to tolerate the fact that there are people who said things that you don't agree with. So free speech is very important. And then free market is very important. If you ask me, nowadays, the most powerful force that keeps government in check is, believe it or not, the financial market. The US government, for example, is so dependent on the financial market that I think with all the chaos and funny businesses going on in the United States now, at the end of the day, they cannot escape the very harsh reality that the market will not really tolerate the insanity that is going on. So I think free market is more important than a lot of people believe in. A lot of people think free market is just a way to for some people to make money. But don't forget that nowadays, government depends on the financial market for public financing. Without public financing, the whole ruling coalition collapses. And no one can be a dictator without the support of a ruling coalition. So that is number two. And I think number three, how can you have a functioning financial market, a free economy in general? I think you need to have competition and cooperation. And competition and cooperation depends on an independent judiciary system as the arbiter of all conflicts, commercial conflicts especially. So I think if you look at different institutions of societies, then I think at somewhere in the middle of the list, you have regular elections. Yes, that is important. I'm not a big fan of electoral politics, but I think from time to time, you need to have elections just to kick the elected people out of office. Even if they do a good job, kicking them out of the office is a good thing. From time to time, no one should stay in the office for too long.
Thank you, Mr. Simon. I think you touched upon really key issues: free open society, free market, functioning market, cooperation, and also the independent judiciary system, which is connected to the rule of law. There are three key issues. I don't know if time allows us. We have just 2-3 minutes. If you just say something about these three issues. One of that is the rule of youth or young generation. As we see in some totalitarian regimes, unfortunately, young people drawn to extreme ideas. This is a big concern right now in our societies. In the second issue, the rule of ordinary citizens, how they can resist against these totalitarian regimes. And the third point is about the rule of media and civil society. Young, media, ordinary people against totalitarian and extremist regimes. Thanks.
I think it goes back to the basic, very basic idea of whether we are self-sufficient as an individual. I'm not saying that we are completely self-sufficient in all needs and wants. That is impossible. But psychologically, we have to be a complete person. If we always think about the world as a dangerous place and people are coming to destroy our value system and things like that, you can easily become a supporter of some strong man. And that is the beginning of the degeneration of a civilization. Civilization is built on individuals who believe in themselves. So I think they have trouble in navigating the very complex landscape, especially now. I have a difficulty in navigating the complex political and societal landscape now. I can totally feel their frustration about the uncertainty in future, especially the challenges especially in economics and technology, is going to displace a lot of jobs. And I know young people are very anxious about that, but that doesn't mean that the government is your savior. This government can be your problem rather than the solution. And it is not about, there is a contradiction in a way that sometimes they want to overthrow the existing structure, but at the same time, people are so afraid of losing the structure that they understand. So I think young people, media, they are all the same. They are driven by fear. And when they are driven by fear, they can easily fall prey to some strongman politics. And we have to understand that the strongmen are not really strongmen. They are just using the weak mind to support their regime. Whoever they are, they're all the same.
Yeah, great. What about the role of civil society?
Civil society, to me, is a state of mind. It is when people will ask themselves what I can do or what we can do voluntarily to make the world a better place. It is a psychological state. So when people do think about what they can do personally to make the world a better place, that is the spirit of civil society. It is very important. And I think that is the ultimate goodness of the civilization. And we have to believe in the people. We have to believe in our neighbors in order to have civil society. Otherwise, we will just say, hey, it's none of my business. Let the government to deal with the problem. Then we develop a culture of dependency. And that is also why some society eventually becomes so dependent on the state.
Thank you, Mr. Simon Lee, for joining us today in our podcast. I'm sure it was a wonderful discussion, particularly it had a message for young generation and for those who are following our programs or podcast and other programs. Thank you so much once again and hope to have you again in our next programs. Thanks.
My pleasure. Talk to you soon. Thank you.